Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we check in with the birthday boy, upcoming 98-year-old Bob Toski. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. Oh, a birthday celebration is coming up. It is September. We're super excited. And of course, we have the birthday boy on the show this week. We wanted to get him on earlier in the month because on the middle of the month is his birthday. So it's less than a couple weeks away. And Toski is always busy and he's got his nose to the grindstone. And when it comes to that party, well, he is on super focus mode. So we welcome Bob Toski to Tee It Up with Keith Jones this week. Hey, Bob. Thanks for making time.
Hi, Keith.
Hey, Bob.
Hi, Keith.
Hey, buddy.
Nice to be on your show again.
Hey, you know, always a regular contributor is one legendary Bob Toski, and we're always happy to have you on, Bob. And I'm happy you're still around. Not 98 yet. You're 97, sounding good. So, you know, you just got to keep it going. So, obviously, you know, towards October or so, we'll have Bob back on the show when he is 98. So there you go. The transition will be complete.
If you don't mind, you know, I heard that they were waiting for me at the pearly gates. And I told them that I was going to be a little late because I was celebrating my birthday at 98.
Now, that sounds right. You know, even the gates can wait for one Bob Toski. You are truly a living legend and the last link to the golden age of golf and sports in general.
I agree, and I just miss all my fellow professionals that played on the tour in the 50s, and the great ones like Snead, Hogan, Mangrum, Demerit, Milikov. You could go on and on. They were not only great players, but they were gentlemen. They knew how to handle themselves. There were very few prima donnas out there. If they were, they didn't keep them out there very long.
So fast forward to 2024, and Scottie Scheffler, yes, my man Scottie, wins the Tour Championship. He should be Golfer of the Year. And I'm sure the rest of the members of the GWAA, Golf Writers Association of America, will probably agree with that. And he went from winning over $30 million, almost $40 million, to adding $25 million for one golf tournament, finishing the year more than $62 million. 62.2, I think, is the final tally on that. $62 million. When Bob played, he was the leading money winner in 1954. And that year, Bob, did you make $62,000?
Said $65,000 some odd dollars.
So you add a few zeros, and there you go. That's life on the tour these days.
Keith, that was a lot of money, though, in the 50s.
Oh, I know, Bob. I mean, that one tournament for $50,000 was huge.
Yeah, the World Championship, right.
So, fast forward all these years. So, what's your take on today's game? We talk about it in different phases and different portions. You know, obviously, Scottie is a tremendous golfer, and Jim McClain was on last week, and we talked about Scottie's kind of unorthodox swing, as Jim kind of called it. You know, it was about the footwork, but it's not how you get it back. It's where you finish, where you get the contact to get the club on the ball. And Scottie's got a great knack. He's got a great ability to do that.
Well, I've always said this, that the most important part of the golf swing is 6 inches before you make contact and 6 inches after contact. And all these players have an innate, intuitive skill to sense and feel the control of the golf club to compress the ball at that point time. And I call it great hand-eye coordination. And that's really the sum and substance of it. And that's a gift. I don't think it can be taught to that degree, to a point of excellence. But it's amazing to me, Keith, how far they drive this golf ball. The game is lost to power now. They drive the ball so far that the courses are too short, and they're shooting 8, 10, 15, 20 under par. I mean, they tear the golf course apart because they drive it so far, they don't have many long irons at the green. And they can score when you've only got a wedge in your hand and you're darting it right at the flag. And then, of course, if you can putt at all, you're gonna win and make a lot of money. Yes, I agree with Jim McLean that Scotty doesn't have the most prolific golf swing. He doesn't have the swing that's with grace and ease, but he knows how to control the golf club and the golf ball, and that's proven by the fact that he's played so many tournaments this year and won so many. So it's amazing what a run he's had, and it's going to be interesting to see how long that continues.
Well, Scotty went into the tournament as the number one seed, so he got a bunch of strokes. They've got that staggered stroke play going on, and he finished 30 under par, 3-0. Now, he didn't make all those birdies and eagles and such. His fourth round was 4 under par, but that was enough to finish 4 strokes ahead of Colin Morikawa, who had a really good showing. He was 5 under in the final round, finished at 26 under par. So that number is definitely skewed because these players get it. How do you digest, or what's your feeling on the way they give players strokes based on their rankings going into that tour championship?
Well, we've never had a format like that on the tour. And I don't... We've always just had stroke play or match play, and that was it. And all these different venues or whatever you want to call them that they're creating is, I'm not in favor of it.
Well, you would think if you went into the tour championship, you're one of the top 30 players that get in, the playing field should be level. That's always been it was that way for a long time. And then the players who they thought were going to win it, the number one players ranking-wise or number two or three, weren't the ones that necessarily won it. But that's part of why you have this tournament. It's an elite tournament with only 30 players in the world. So it should be level playing field.
I agree with the fact that everybody should play from scratch and let it go. That's it.
Yeah, otherwise, why don't you just stroke the check to the world number one player before the tournament, and, you know, that's how it ends up anyway.
What are they trying to prove?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you, because you played on the tour for a number of years, and obviously it was different then, but you followed the tour very closely, still do. And, you know, these guys, you know, $25 million for a win. It's not just, that's not the tournament purse. That's the winner's purse. That is insane to me. For a guy, and I love Scotty. And anybody listening to this show knows that that's my guy, and it's been my guy for a few years. But he already had almost $40 million won on the tour. So what does that tell you about the purses, right? Partially thank you to Liv. But... one tournament winner purse, $25 million. I don't think people can relate to that.
Well, I agree, because that kind of money for 4 days of golf is that averages out at how much per day?
too much. No, 12 and a half, so $6.25 million.
If you were to talk to Scotty and ask him personally, What do you think about the fact that you just played in this tournament and won $25,000? I would love to hear what he has to say about the fact that he just made $25 million. And he probably say the same thing you just said. It's insane, but I don't think he's going to throw that money away. He's going to keep it.
It's the going rate. And, you know, but this is the thing that I admire, one of the things I admire about Scotty, and this is probably first and foremost, is his love for the game and the reason he plays the game. Because, yes, you get a lot of money along the way when you win, but it does take me. He reminds me of an older decade player that played for the love of the game versus just being out there because I can win a lot of money.
No question about it. The fact is he's a great competitor, and these guys love to win. I love to win. Everybody loves to win. And the more they win, the more prestige, the more money. It's just a question of they can handle it. Can they handle all that prestige and all that money? And I wonder how they can keep concentrating on playing the game to the high level that they do when they got all that money, because it, to me, like you had just mentioned, it's insane.
The purse for the Tour Championship was $100 million. The purse, $100 million divided by 30 players. So, again, you want to make it. But this is part of the issue that I've had since the LIV conversation started, when that tour started up. Because those guys were always accused of doing it for the money. Right? Oh, you went, you got bought out and everything else. So the powers that be in Pontevedra say, oh, we got to come up and we got to make these purse numbers bigger for these guys, because we want to keep them around, or we want to satisfy them or pacify them or whatever words that you want to use in that situation. But there are a lot of guys that want to be on the PGA Tour and would probably pay to play. Actually, they do. You have to enter with money every week, but a lot of these guys just love the opportunity to be on the PGA Tour. And I say this firsthand because I've taught the guys, journeymen and some other guys that struggled over a surprise. Like Spike McRoy always comes to mind because he was a great guy and enjoyed having him on the show. But here's a guy that got on the PGA Tour, and I said, Spike, so what was it like, you know, we got on the tour? He's like, well, you know, go into the locker room and you open your locker and there's free gloves and there's free balls and there's like, and everybody is, you know, you know, they're doing the whole, you know, dance for you. And it's like we didn't get that when I was playing on the, you know, developmental tours. You know, you had to scrape by and do everything you were doing. I just think, to me, the money is misplaced. And you see this a lot in professional sports. Well, yes, elite athletes are elite athletes. All right, you know, Tom Brady's going to make $37 million, $37.5 million a year, not to play football, but to talk about it in the booth. That's a nice job to have. But when you talk about these leagues and the teams and such, I mean, it's fine that the guys get their money, but you know, the money, the PGA Tour always talks about all the money they've given to charities and different things like that. You can do a lot more to develop players and other entities around the PGA Tour with that money.
I totally agree with your concept. And I was in the booth with Ray Scott, and I did some television work for PGA Tour, and I never got even $37,000, never mind $37 million.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. With Bob Toski, we'll be back after this break. And we're back to spend the hour with Bob Toski. Yeah, the legendary Bob Toski, the godfather of the golf swing. Jim McLean says hi to you, sir. Toski, because Toski came before the likes of McLean. And those guys have an appreciation. I will say the teaching tree definitely has an appreciation for what came before it. And I think from that profession to back to the actual playing profession, a lot of times those guys either don't know or they forget who came before them.
I love history, and I was holding court at this Abaco Country Club, and I had more of the players that played there come around the table and talk baseball, whatever sport. Then, of course, we got talking about golf, and they wanted to know why the game was so hard. And I said, well, the ball is at the base of your feet, and it never comes up to you unless you put a tee on it. And you better find it without a tee and compress the ball and square the club face, and if you can't do that, you're history. But they don't realize that the golf club, starting on the turf with the sole going about 7 feet in the air and on the backswing, and the height of the club face with the driver. And then the club face has to accelerate back to the ball from a parallel position at the top of the swing and come back to the point of this 1.62-ounce golf ball and compress it and try to hit it 300 yards and keep it in the fairway. I want to tell you something. That takes a hell of a lot of talent.
Well, maybe that's why that the tour thinks these players should be compensated as well as they are, besides just the live reason.
Well, you know, I think it's all about money. It's all about money. The LIV Tour is forcing the PGA to come up with more money for their players. You have any idea how much money they gave Mickelson to bail him out from all the money that he owed?
I thought the number was around $35 million. I don't want to misspeak, but, yeah, it was a hefty chunk of change.
No, I heard it was over $300 million.
Oh, for the bailout? I left a zero off there somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's the information I got yesterday, but I don't know how that works out. But you know, he owed so much money to the bookies, and unfortunately, he had that problem gambling. But it's amazing how they take care of these players now. Keith, it's just Christmas every day out there.
It's pretty good, Bob. I do have to say, I was talking to somebody recently who had been out on the LIV Tour, had covered it, and the big party and the big reception where everybody was treated like royalty, even the media, in the first season, it kind of tailed off, and it's not quite the same way these days. But it's still interesting to see and follow what's going on. And obviously, Brooks had a good year, and John Rahm, and so, you know, these players are there. They're not going away. Obviously, you mentioned Phil, and Phil doesn't get mentioned as much, but he's pretty much the first guy that stepped across the line, and then a lot of guys followed, and there will be more that followed still.
I guess loyalty doesn't mean anything anymore. All these golfers really came to America to make money and win tournaments and become famous. They came from Europe, Asia, you name it. We have even the Americans like Koepka, who I taught when he was in college. And they all of a sudden, they leave this country to go to another country to play because of money. They didn't go over there to play for peanuts. That, to me, hurts when I see how great the tour has been way back in the early 1900s, and all the great players that played for America and stayed in America, like Hogan, Snead, Mangum, all these players, and to see these players leave this country to go to a place like Saudi Arabia. I'm not very happy with that because I'm an old-fashioned player from the 50s and the 40s, and I owe an allegiance to the PGA. I don't care how they talk about how bad the PGA ran the tour now. We were so happy to be a part of the PGA Tour and playing in America, and only in America.
With Bob Tasky, the famous one, we'll be back.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga la Gunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with the legendary Bob Tasky. Robert John coming up on his 98th birthday, Big Shore Way, coming up later this month. We'll be personally in attendance. Appreciate the invitation, and Bob is like family. So the fact that it's limited, I think, what's it? There are only going to be 120, 125 players in attendance?
We have 120, and I can't tell you how many I had to turn away. So many people wanted to come, and I guess they probably thought it might be the last one, but I'll keep going.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. You owe those people, Bob. You know, at least a few more years just to fit in those people, to give them a chance another time or two to see you perform. I know there will be a performance. There always is. Bob does a great song and dance. Got Gino on the keys, he's got the whole thing laid out. A lot of special guests. Now, last year, I sat, actually, Bob Rotella's brother sat between us, but Rotella was at my table, and some other notables. And it's like a who's who when you go to a Tasky birthday party. It is like a who's who.
Yes, and it's even bigger this year. I've got and the entertainment. Have you ever heard of the Quick Step?
For golf, we're going golf, or is this a dance?
For dancing.
Maybe, but I don't recall.
Quick Step. Well, it's a dance that is so interesting to watch because you better have quick feet, quick hands, quick eyes, because there's a lot of different moves made while you're dancing, and it's beautiful to watch. And I've got a couple that's going to dance at my party, and that's something new that I put on the menu, and I'm so excited about this couple that's going to dance, and it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to liven the show up, I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's good. I thought I'm a pretty good dancer. I thought I was going to have to dance quick-wise. I'm not sure that I could pull that one off, so I'm glad got a couple of professionals being brought in by Bob.
You heard of the Peppermint Twist, right?
Well, yeah, of course.
Chubby Checkers is the Peppermint Twist, but the Peppermint Twist is all they do is turn their hips, but this dance is the feet go in more directions, and the players turning the other player's body. It's just a dance that I know that everyone that sees this dance is going to just talk about it. I'm so proud that I got this couple, and one of them is European. He's got a name. His first name is Alexander, but his last name, I couldn't pronounce it if you gave me $1 million.
Okay, well, I don't have $1 million to give you, Bob, so I'm not going to even try that. I'll make something up. But speaking of Chubby Checker, though, full circle, because one of my favorite musicians is George Thorogood. famously of the Delaware Destroyers or of the Destroyers, Mr. Bad to the Bone. And he had the opportunity recently to meet Chubby Checker. Chubby Checker was born on October 3rd of 1941. He's younger than Bob by a decade, about a decade and a half, really. But it was just one of those moments in time when, you know, a pretty famous musician meets a really famous musician. And George posted a picture on that and just thought that was one of the coolest things. And that is because Chubby Checker really had a huge impact on American music. And those guys are greatly underappreciated. I know that was decades ago, although Bob will tell you that he was in his heyday when Chubby was singing.
Right. Exactly right.
So I'm looking forward to this quick dance thing, and of course you're doing your soft shoe and all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, they call it quick step. And boy, it is a quick step, I'll tell you. They're turning, sliding, they got it all. It's about 5 to 10 minutes or something that I'm so happy that's going to by having in my party.
All right, so where are they going to dance? Because is it in the same ballroom as last year?
Yeah, but they're going to make. It's amazing what they can do, Keith. Fran Bannon says there's no problem. We're going to put a circular dance floor below the regular stage, and the tables are going to be set in such a way that they'll be going around the dance floor. And the dance floor, it will be 16 feet by 16 feet in a circle. And they'll come out and dance on that floor right down below the stage. So that's big enough for them to be able to move freely and execute their steps.
Okay, good. I was concerned about that because that was kind of, you know, getting you up on stage was a challenge enough, so having dancers around there and stuff.
No,
but
no.
You've been working on this thing for probably at least a year, right?
Well, I started right after I finished last year.
You sound like my friends at Reed Exhibitions when they put on the PGA show, merchandise show in Orlando, and they're like they take maybe a couple days off and then they're right back at it. So yeah.
Well, I've always had so much love for having people join me for my birthday, and you know, people are so important to me, like they are to you, and to have people come and join me for my birthday, especially at my age, I try to do everything I can to make them have a couple of hours of joy and friendship and entertainment, and that's the big thing: entertainment and good food. And no speeches. Yes, we're going to have one speech. The historian for the United States Golf Association, Charlie Hamilton, is going to make a 3-minute speech. And he's the only guy that this guy is quite a guy. He's a great speech maker. He's got a lot of history about golf. Oh, he got history. And he'll be up on stage for 3 minutes.
Well, good. He better show up this year. He wasn't there at last year's party. He better be there. He better be there. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you know, I have this Frenchman coming back from France, Ivan Folio, who thinks he's... and he can sing well. He thinks he's... this guy,
Maurice Chevalier.
Yeah, Maurice Chevalier. He sings a little bit like him, and so I'm going to have him sing "La Vie en Rose," and he's going to sing it in both French and English.
Wow!
And he's so excited about getting up on that stage and singing that And you'll be impressed at how well he can handle himself.
Oh, I'm sure. I remember I met him last year, the year before, but he loves you, Bob. So, you know, that's the fact for you giving that invitation to get up on stage. That is.
Yeah, I told him, I said, if you're going to come back this year to my party, the least I can do is show you off in front of all my friends, because I know how much you love to sing like I do, and to sing La Vie en Rose is one of the better songs in French.
Oui, indeed. As we're with Bob Toski, the legendary Bob Toski, a regular contributor to this show, talking about his upcoming birthday soiree. Well, this week we did. We'll find out in a few weeks how it went. Well, boots on the ground, obviously. It'd be a pleasure to be there, as I've been for a number of years now. So I guess I'm quiet enough and unassuming enough that I keep sneaking back in. So that part works out really, really well that way. But now, Bob, it's great that you're able to do this. And, you know, people would come to celebrate your birthday with you without the food, without the dance, without the singing or anything else.
You know, I have 15 different states coming for my birthday.
That's it? 15? It's not all 50 states?
No. I couldn't handle 50 states. I'm having trouble handling 15.
I don't know. This is a national show, so, you know, I know I'm not on in every city and every state, but, you know, maybe that puts you close.
I'm coming from California, Phoenix, Arizona, New York, you name it. That's what it's all about. It's all about people and music and food. And they might even want to dance on that dance floor.
Oh, yeah, you got the dance floor. Oh, maybe so. Yeah, hopefully there's some females there.
Well, you ought to go up there and do a soft shoe or something like
that. Yeah, I need to bring some soft shoes. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. I'll be walking around there.
Bring some leather shoes. And
I'm big on the leather shoes. Yeah, Toski, you're something else.
I'm just me. Yeah, that's all there is.
Yeah, but you know, this is kind of a country club life, and it takes me back to when you started, when you weren't in a country club, you were working at a country club. So fast forward many years, and look at you now.
I can't believe I'm alive at 97. I know I'm going to make 98. And to share that age with 120 guests, I'm more excited about it than you can imagine. I just can't wait for September 16th to arrive, and I'm going to hide so you won't see me, because I'm going to open the show coming up from one door. There's about three or four doors. You won't know which one. And I'll come walking out and singing, "Welcome to My World,"
which has become your signature song. So nobody else can claim it at this point.
Yeah, I saw Elvis Presley sing that the other day. I think I might have a heads up on him with that one. But Elvis Presley, he can sing any way he wants to, and they love it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. You're right there. I mean, obviously, Aloha from Hawaii was a huge album from him, and it's hard to believe he did that back in 1973. That's pretty crazy. That takes me back. I was a youngster, but I was still around. And those Elvis specials on TV, they were something else.
Yeah, you're right. I'd like to mention to you that the PGA is dragging with the LIV tour about coming up with some kind of a deal. Do you know all about that?
Well, yeah. What I do know is that Monahan has come out and said things are going to take a bit longer and have been taking quite a long time. They're still supposedly working on a deal with the Saudis because they want an infusion of that cash. So, which would be, it's so convoluted right now. I mean, you have the guys, what you thought were the black hats, and the guys with the white hats, and now everybody's coming to be gray hats, you know, it kind of blending together, and the LIV doesn't look as bad these days. I mean, there is a bad man, running it in a guy named Greg Norman, but other than that, if people can put their hate away for Greg and look aside, but see, my hometown is Washington, D.C., and there's a national newspaper called the Washington Post, and they helped bring President Nixon down, and they can't stand LIV because of the Saudi-backed money, and I get it because Khashoggi was, supposedly, I have to, check with the attorneys on how, how I phrase this, that type of thing, but the story is Khashoggi was assassinated by the Saudi government. And so the Washington Post has this, and anybody that writes for them, just about anybody that writes for them, if you have a conversation with them, will take be a very hard line about LIV and the Saudi money. Had Greg and the powers that be found their money anywhere else, almost anywhere else, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But that's not the case, and that's where we stand right now. So how the Saudis continue, but they're into Formula One racing. They've got professional soccer clubs. I mean, the Saudis have a lot of money to spend, and they are buying things left and right, sports-wise especially.
Exactly, yeah. But Greg Norman made all his money in America, and all his fame and fortune he made in this country. And for him then to get involved with a new tour, especially the Saudis, I've lost a little respect for him.
Yeah, but Bob, there's already a tour in the U.S., the one that you played on, the one that everybody over the years, over the decades, have sought to join, be a member of the PGA Tour in America, as you mentioned, the European Tour, which is now DP, Poulter, and all those guys, Westwood, they all either came to the United States, to move to the United States, or they lived here enough to get their card on the PGA Tour. That was what they aspired to do, and that's what a lot of them did, and quite successfully. That was the motherland that you had to get to golf-wise. Nowadays, it's become diluted, and with this LIV Tour development, things have certainly changed on the professional golf horizon. But I think a lot of regular people, fans or spectators or whatever, have soured on professional golf. Not just the LIV situation, but they've soured with the PGA Tour, and the PGA Tour is trying to do what they can to stay in good favor and such. But I'm just glad that recreational golf is going gangbusters and doing very well. People kind of say, you know what, I'm not going to watch these millionaires play. I'm going to go play myself and enjoy myself. And we're enjoying ourselves this hour as we're with great Bob Toski. Heading to our final break, back to wrap up the show. So it's a pleasure to spend time with the Hall of Famer, multi-Hall of Famer, living legend, one Robert John Toski. And this guy, he's something else, and I got to tell you. So I have a question for you, Bob, since Welcome to My World is now become your song. We know Elvis sang it. Dean Martin also sang it. It's been covered by a lot of artists over the years. Who originally sang Welcome to My World?
You got me there.
Jim Reeves. It was originally.
Oh my God.
Exactly. See, if you say Jim Reeves, people are like, I think I heard of him. Jim Reeves was pretty famous, but the genre,
yes.
The genre was country. It was a country song first, and then, you know, kind of made into popular music, if you will. And then Elvis took it to a whole nother level from that standpoint. But that's, you know, that's like the golf swing, right? The golf swing originated one way, and then people have their own versions of the golf swing.
Well, I'll ask you a question. Do you know anybody at 97 or 98 that sings Welcome to My World?
Yes. I raised my hand in the back of the class. That's where I like to sit, the back of the class. Yes, I know somebody. His name is Bob. Last name.
Yeah, you have
last name Algatoski.
Last name though.
Algatoski. No. All right, Toski. Well, when did you officially change your last name?
After I won the World Championship and became number one on a tour, my dad took me to courthouse in Northampton, Mass, and allowed me to change the name from Algatoski to Toski. I think I was the only one in the family that was allowed to do that.
All because the first.
Well, can you imagine him? He never dreamed that he'd have a son to be number one player in the world in 1954. Of course, to me, I knew it made him so happy and so proud. And that's one of the things I loved about helping my dad, who had, you know, was very poor and didn't make a lot of money and struggled to survive and keep nine children happy. And I could never be like my father because he gave up so much and had so little.
He was a machine, though. Nine kids. Walenti, I think, was your dad's name, right?
Yeah. Walenti. My father's name was Walenti.
Yeah, so you become
W-A-L-E-N-T-Y.
So you become the Toski, and your life has never been the same.
I was in bed. I laid in bed with him when he passed away. He wanted me to stay with him in bed, and I saw him take his last gasp, and it was beautiful to watch because he was happy to have his son that he respected so much for what I did for the family name, and it was a very dramatic time for me to watch my dad pass away at 89 years of age.
Well, you kind of lapped him because you're going to be the reverse of the numbers. It's like being dyslexic. You're going to be 98, and I know you can't believe that. And I know we've talked about it numerous times, both on air and off air. But you know, you have done so much for so many people, Bob. That's what your legacy. You know, it's great that you're still around. And again, I have many more shows ahead with you. And there are people who can't get to your birthday party because numbers are limited that want to become in the future. So, you know, you owe us a few more years minimally. I'm banking on about five more. But anyway, that aside, you've done so much for so many people over the years.
Well, I've tried to do some to put back into golf what golf has given to me. And I've tried to help the professional golfers and the amateur golfers. I just wanted to put something back into the game and became a teacher and teach people to enjoy the game and try to play better. And that's a challenge in itself because I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but I will anyway. 90% of all my golfers that I taught from 1970 to 1990 for Golf Digest, 90% of them had poor hand-eye coordination, and if you've got poor hand-eye coordination, you're not going to be a very good player.
Well, that's a way to finish up the show. The great Bob Toski, my guest on TW Keith Jones. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Bob wants you to. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.